This is the Mentoring Developers Podcast, episode 58. Finally.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 58 of Mentoring Developers. A lot of you must have been waiting for this episode for a few weeks. As you know, this episode is coming out a little bit late, but I think you will really enjoy listening to this interview with my special guest, Carlos Kampf. Carlos is special because he's not a regular software developer. He wants to be a software developer and he wants to do something very specific with his new skills. I think you'll need to learn a little bit about his backstory to know why this is relevant and why this is interesting. He's a musician. He is a hardcore musician and a music teacher. That's what he does. He got into a situation where he realized that he really needed to learn programming, software development in order to advance his music career. That's pretty interesting. I'm also somebody who's interested in learning how to make music, and I've been learning to play the guitar, so I'm naturally curious about this topic. I had a lot of fun talking to Carlos, and I think you'll enjoy listening to it, and I think you'll learn. If you're listening to this podcast right now and you have a friend or a family member who's really good at something, but they're stuck in a rut and they're not really advancing in their careers and they're not very successful, you might want to introduce them to the concept of software development as a tool to really launch their careers and to enable them to start businesses around what they already love. That's something very interesting, and I think you're going to learn about this and a whole lot more in my interview with Carlos Kampf. Here it is. Hi, everyone. Today, my guest is Carlos Munoz Kampf. How are you, Carlos?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you, Arsalan?
I am awesome, and it's so good to have you here because we have discovered when we were talking that we have a lot in common, including the fact that you did something with your programmable calculator back in high school and you were cheating on an exam and you got away with it. All right, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that, you know, back then it just seemed like a guilty pleasure, but now it's becoming what my life is all about, which is kind of interesting. So when I was in high school, they wanted us to use these calculators, which were the TI-84 calculators that you might remember. And the thing about those is that, you know, they could do all kinds of mathematical computations, but also they were programmable. And they, at my school, I hope my teachers are not listening right now, but but they assumed if they didn't teach us how to program that we wouldn't just figure it out. And as soon as I found out that you could program it, I just went and I studied, I read through, you know, all the manuals on like how to program, and I just made basically cheat programs for all my tests where all you'd have to do is say, I want you to do this, please, and here's A and here's B and here's C. Please figure out this, you know, computation, and it would do it all for me. So a lot of times I'd have to just like twiddle my thumbs at the end of a math test to pretend that I'm doing something because I'd be done already. So that got me curious about it. And then I went into different avenues. After that, I started, you know, playing music and joined a band, moved to the United States to study music. And then through that, then I started learning about entrepreneurship. And then years later, through doing that, I came back around to my interests in technology and coding in particular. And that sucked me back into that world.
So you're currently in a coding bootcamp in Portland, Oregon, right? Now, I was going to ask you to describe yourself because that's one of the questions we always start with. How do you describe yourself? Who is Carlos Kampf? But I think it's going to be hard because you have your legs in three or four different boats. So, but you know, but see if you can. You know, who is Carlos? We want to understand who you are.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to understand who I am as well. One thing I can say is, like, I'm really a curious person. I like to learn about many different things. Like, I've, for example, played music for a circus troupe that was on a reality TV show on True TV. That was an experience. I've toured with bands. I started my own business, and I'm always learning, just very curious and learning about many different things. And I'm an idea person. So, like, I think of ideas all the time, which has been actually hard in my life. It's hard to describe ideas to people, and it's hard to not have people interact with you in that level and not be necessarily all about the ideas as well. So until I found the entrepreneurship and the coding community, that was the case. And now I'm really starting to feel like I'm finding my people where they're all about ideas too. And that's really exciting. So
that's good. It's good to have ambition. It's good to have ideas, but it only matters and it's only beneficial if you put that into action and actually produce results. And you know that because you have your own business and you've been working on it for a few years. So we're going to talk all about that. But first, I want to know about your first encounter with programming. I know that you worked on that TI-84 calculator, and that was pretty cool. But when we talk about programming, traditionally, we're talking about sitting in front of a computer and typing into a keyboard and making stuff happen. So what was your first encounter with programming?
So my first encounter with programming, like more recently, was just being curious about Swift and learning how to make my own apps. So, for example, I made a metronome app that my students can use to have a metronome.
Yes, we need more of those. We don't have enough.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. That's a joke, folks, because it's kind of a joke because there are a million metronome apps. But if you make it without ads, and that is fairly accurate, metronome is a great tool to have. So, tell me a little bit more about this app when you get a chance. Maybe outside of the interview, because I've been learning music and trying to play the guitar for a while, and I would love to know more about your metronome app. Go ahead.
So that was really just a project because I was interested in coding. So it's not, I don't think I'm going to take over the world with my metronome app. But there's something to, I think there's a switch that we can all, you know, choose to engage in, which is, are we consuming technology or are we creating technology? And I think when you decide to create the technology, even if you're reinventing the wheel just in your own way, I think it's really, it's kind of magical, you know, to see how things work and you know, to create things in your own way. Like, for example, I noticed that every morning when I'm going to coding school, you know, I need to make sure to get the bus on time. So here in Portland, there's a TriMet API where you can get the exact time of the bus. So I made an alarm that tells me if the bus is running on time or if it's early or late or whatever. So that's, you know, the cool thing about coding is that there's always like a little niche. It's always a little, you know, maybe that app will only work for people that live in Portland and take the bus, you know, but there's just so many, you know, problems and solutions out there, which is, it's really fascinating.
That's true. Programming is like that superpower that can allow people to literally sometimes change the world, sometimes make people's lives better, sometimes just, and it's fun, but, but it's also kind of useful. And there is an opportunity, perhaps, that if you make something that is very useful, maybe somebody will pay you for that. So that could be, that could turn into a product, a business. So I think programming, software development, and entrepreneurship are sort of tied together. As long as there are people making software, there will be entrepreneurs who are programmers. So that's pretty awesome. And you didn't study programming or computer science in college.
That's correct. Yeah.
And you, but did you study something else in college? Did you go to college?
I did go to college. I went to the Berklee College of Music for film scoring, which is music for movies. So there is some technology involved. Like you're learning about audio and about MIDI and interacting with video and whatnot. But that's only half of the program, and most of it was about, you know, learning music and learning how to orchestrate and write for different types of ensembles and arrangements and stuff. Yeah.
I've heard that Berklee College of Music's entrance exam or auditions and whatever else they do, whatever gymnastics you have to do to get in are incredibly hard. Did you have to go through any of that?
Yeah. So the thing at Berklee is, it's, as far as I know, it's the biggest music school there is, like as far as like the amount of music students that they have. And Berklee is a very tiered program. So there's many different types of, you know, entry levels and different. It's almost like a bunch of different conservatories all together in the same place. So so there's this leveling system that kind of carries you through the whole thing. It can give you different experiences, and it was actually really inspiring. It's been an inspiration for me because in my business, I've started implementing like a leveling system as well, because I felt like that was really effective.
Okay, so but I think you're, when you refer to a leveling system, you're talking about multi-tier kind of environment where you can get more out of it if you invest more. So it could be, so help us explain what you mean by leveling system. I think from what I understand, you're talking about you can go to level one or level two, and level two means everything in level one plus some more, and level two, exactly, everything in level two. But so yeah, I think personally, I would probably describe it as a multi-tier system, tier one, tier two, tier three.
Okay.
I think maybe people understand that better. Okay, but you did not study computer programming.
No.
Until you started this code camp.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And that's the first question. You have a business because you started in 2011.
Yep.
And you were making money. Was it making money?
Yeah.
Was it making enough money for you to live on?
Not in the Bay Area. It's definitely difficult to live in the Bay Area. And you know, it's a bootstrapped kind of a business. So, you know, we need to, you know, make money to be able to spend money, you know? So in that sense, you know, it's been growing slowly and steadily, and we try to keep our overhead to the minimum. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about this business. I think a lot of people would be curious by now. What business are you running? First of all, why are you doing this in the Bay Area? Yeah. I know because you told me about your business, but the listeners don't know. So let's talk a little bit about what business it is. Has it changed over time? And why did you do this business and not something else?
Okay. So the idea for this business came when I was in New Orleans. And I don't know if you've ever been. Have you ever been to New Orleans?
I have.
Yeah, it's just an amazing cultural experience when you're there. You know, it's just like you go from the best blues you ever heard, and then you go across the street and it's the best jazz you've ever heard, and you go across the street and it's the best southern rock you ever heard. It's just a really enlivening experience there. And that's where I was there visiting a friend, and that's when I started crafting the business plan for a music school. And the main question was like, how can we have that same, we're not going to recreate a New Orleans somewhere else, but how can we give like at least a little bit of that cultural richness to, you know, to your city, you know, to, so that's what I, with that mission, I started the business in Danville, California, and I already had some connections there. And I started step by step having music students and then hiring other music teachers. And then we was part of starting another business called JJ Music Camps, which does summer camps and puts kids in bands. So I'm the music director for that program. And then parallel to that, I started Star Power Music. And Star Power Music is all about the actual learning of how to play your instrument. And that's where I started integrating that. What do you call it? The multi-tiered system. Mm-hmm. And what we saw with that is immediately when I created it and implemented it, the students just like sparked up. And the reason is they all want to get to a certain point where they can feel really proud of how they're playing music, but they're generally confused as to how they're ever going to get there. And by creating that multi-tiered system, it actually, people light up because they feel like they can envision themselves taking each one of those steps. And so I think it's a ladder in a way that, you know, students feel excited to climb. So I found it, because I wasn't sure, because people might feel like it's an oppressive thing, right? Oh, there's this level and I'm just trying to have fun with my guitar. You know, there's been maybe a couple of people that have been affected in that way, but for the most part, the response has been great. Like the parents love it, the students love it. They want to know that they're making progress and they're having those like small wins, because it is hard to learn music. It is hard to learn coding as well. Many things are hard to learn. So like having those little wins really helps you stay motivated. So in more specific terms, like that philosophy, and then also the philosophy of doing community events and bringing the community together and getting people to meet each other, right? Because that's the ultimate goal, really, if you think about it. Like they have to have something, that you want to see, which is the kid improving, right? And the kid playing music in a way that's pleasing to your ears, because otherwise you probably wouldn't want to come. So that's the, that's the fireplace, but the whole point is that people will come to that fireplace. People will come to that event and they'll meet each other and they'll build relationships and friendships. And that's how you get to that, creating a community in the same way that I feel like exists in New Orleans in an overwhelming way. I was trying to bring a little taste, a little flavor of that to other communities.
I think that's a really interesting idea, especially in music, because music is something that everybody wants to do. Or I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of us, including myself, we would love to be able to play a certain kind of music, and we would love to be proficient and not suck, right? But as soon as people start playing any instrument, they realize they do suck because it takes years of practice. It's not like programming where you can potentially start from zero and in 6 months you can churn out a product which would look very good. And it's a possibility that within a few months of starting, you could actually be hired to do this professionally, right? Mm-hmm. It's not the same with music. So music takes a lot of patience, a lot of practice. And you're talking about, as far as I can tell, you're talking about assigning levels to people based on their proficiency. So if I don't know anything, maybe I'm level zero.
Exactly.
And then I go and I learn a few chords and I learn some basics, and you feel like, okay, now you're level one. And then you can graduate from level one to two to three, and it makes you feel like you're actually making progress. It's not a huge continuum. It's not like you're going to, 10 years later, you're either a professional or you're an amateur. There are levels in between. I think that's a really good idea. So I think that people should check it out. And we're going to have all the links in the show notes. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're driving or you're not able to take notes, don't worry about it. We're going to have all the links and everything in the show notes. So go check out his academy. Obviously, you'll need to be physically in the Bay Area, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for now.
So if you are in the Bay Area, then I think this will be great. But looks like you're targeting kids, which I think is a very good idea. But there are lots of adults that probably like to learn as well. So maybe you should think about that, Carlos.
Well, actually, that's that is something that I've been thinking about a lot, and it is part of why I'm in coding school, because what I found is that adults are very busy. So for them to meet at a regular time, and also for them to want to spend a certain amount of money, it always ends up being in the chopping block for something that they're like, oh, well, you know, I need to pay my ever more expensive cell phone bill. I need to choose something to cut off. Oh, I'm not going to do music. So what we're trying to do is make it more accessible, especially for adults and young adults. Like a lot of times young adults, you know,
like myself.
Exactly. you're 29, right?
I'm 19.
So what I was going to say is that, yeah, that, that young adults oftentimes don't have the money and, you know, sort of the steady, in time to be able to have a teacher come to their house or even go to a school. So that's where I'm trying to introduce technology where we could maybe stream lessons and have tools, that would make it easy to do like streaming and lessons remotely, because you know I see that technology getting better each day.
Right. I think that's an idea worth pursuing. So hopefully you will find success, and people who are interested in learning more about an instrument, they want to be musicians and they just never had a chance, they now can get in touch with you, and I'm sure you'll help them out. So you are in a code camp. The question is, why? Why do you want to, first of all, be a developer? Mm-hmm. And, well, lots of people just go online and read books and just hack their way through through coding. But no, you decided to go to a code camp. So the first question is, why do you even want to be a software developer? And the second question is, why do you want to go to a code camp?
Cool. The school year prior to this one, I went to an entrepreneurship boot camp, basically where you learn all about starting a small business, or if you have a business, growing it. And constantly during the program, they were referring to this technology and that service and this thing. And what you find as a small business owner is that, and I'm sure other listeners of yours that are business owners probably relate to this, is you end up having like 10 different accounts to 10 different things. Like, oh, you do Evite for this, and you have, you know, QuickBooks for that, and you have, you know, so by the end you have all these different services and they're not speaking to each other, and everything is very disconnected. So what I'm hoping to do in learning how to code is how to create something that's more integrated and something that I can understand, and something that that I have some, you know, ownership over, in the sense of like I know how it works, I know what it's capable of, and if I want a feature, I can just go and create it. So it kind of seemed like a natural progression to learn about business and then learn the technology to actually implement a lot of these ideas. So I started by self-learning, right? Like a lot of people, like Treehouse and Udemy, and learning coding there. And I actually found the lessons very helpful, and they're great. But the one issue is you inevitably run into a bug as soon as you're not doing exactly what they're telling you, and you try to do your own creative project, mm-hmm. you run into bugs, right? And then what, right? You try to go on Stack Overflow, you try to go on GitHub, but it's confusing, and it can be discouraging. So I found that in a coding bootcamp, there's that community, right? Like last night, I just went out with my cohort and we went out for beers, right? So it's just like there's this sense of like we're all in this together, we understand each other, and even though we're over beers and having snacks, we'll still be talking about, okay, how did you integrate Firebase into your Angular 2 project, right? Like, you're just being around people that understand some of these questions and, you know, and will tell you, no, don't try to do that. That's been deprecated years ago. You're going down the wrong rabbit hole, right? So things like that I found incredibly valuable about being in a boot camp and learning with other people.
That's very interesting. I think what a boot camp does for you is creates an sort of an artificial environment where you're all in this proverbial boat. You're all going together and you're all doing the same thing, because I'm assuming that you're doing similar, if not exactly the same project. Is that kind of what it is?
That is true.
Every time you're given a project, everybody's doing the same project, just like in a class in college. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you are forced to be physically together. So you know that if you talk to the person next to you, they're also working on the same problem, which means they will have empathy for your situation, first of all. And they will not have to learn what you're trying to do. So if you come to me and say, Arslan, can you help me with this issue? Or I have a question about this thing. I have to first learn what you're trying to do. I'm going to say, I will tell you, slow down, Carlos, tell me. Because it's happened to me before. People will tell me and they'll just rattle off like, ding, 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 this. And I'm like, wait, what is it about? Give me some context first. Right. So I'm going to get some context. It's going to take some time. Then I have to go through your code. It may take half an hour to really understand where you're coming from before I could even begin to help you. And that could be a reason why, if you come to me, right? Honestly, if you go to another person who's maybe a helpful person in general, but if you go to that person for some advice, some assistance on a technical problem, they may be like, oh no, that's going to take me an hour just to wrap my mind around what he's doing, and I have kids, and I have this, and I have that. So none of that happens when you are inside a cohort, because first of all, if you're in a cohort, you probably don't have kids. You're probably not married because you probably got divorced. Or somebody, because, you know, I don't know. If I tried to join a code camp right now, I probably get divorced. There's a certain time in your life where you can't just do that. So if you're in a cohort, you probably don't have responsibilities. I was just trying to say that in a funny way. You don't have responsibilities. You're in there. That's all you're doing. If you're in a cohort and you're on campus, you're not doing anything else. That's all you're doing. Right?
So it's very demanding.
So the barrier to entry for me to go in and ask somebody is low. So I think that's a really powerful concept that code boot camps bring, that even colleges cannot do. Because when you're in college, you have multiple classes, you're doing multiple things, and you might have jobs. But if you are in a coding boot camp, I don't think you have the capacity to have a job on the side. That's your job, right?
Right. It's very... So first of all, I'm going to Epicodus in Portland, and the idea is revolutionary, actually, the way to have us work. It's a flipped classroom. So you learn, you watch the tutorials at home and, you know, learn how things work. Or maybe in the morning when you're there, you'll watch some tutorials of how to implement something. And then you spend 8 hours there with a partner, because you pair with a different person each day. So you spend 8 hours trying to accomplish those things and try to, you know, meet those goals and lessons. So you have tons of time, like, on hands coding. And, you know, as you know, I mean, that's one of the most important things. Like, Bill Gates, you know, said that it was really valuable the time that I guess he had access to some thing in a library where he was able to work with these computers and had tons of hours programming. And that seems like it's the most important piece. It's the same in music, actually. Like, you can learn a concept about music, but if you don't know how to play it in your instrument, it doesn't matter. You know, no one's going to come to the concert to watch you think about some idea. You need to actually be able to do it, right? So I'm finding that at Epicodus, I'm really being able to just practice and learn those little, learn all the key commands, learn all the, it's almost like a sport, right? You need to have a certain flow to it and have certain good habits of, copy pasting certain things instead of, certain names so that you get the spelling correctly, or how to check for common bugs. And so I'm finding the bootcamp like very, very effective in that sense.
That's good to know. It's good that it's helping somebody like you who has never really done any real programming before this, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever write a program before this? Did you ever write like a page of like a function to do something? Because I know that you worked on your calculator a little bit, but before you started Epicodus.
Epicodus, yeah.
Did you actually write a complete program? The metronome app was part of this.
That was before. Okay. That was something I learned from Udemy. They were teaching a tutorial on how to make a clock, and I was like, oh, I'm sure I can make that into a metronome if I just add, a sound to each time there's a second. And then you can change the duration. So, nice. So I've done a little bit before, but there's plenty of people that in the program that started from absolute scratch. I mean, one of my best friends there is a plumber. Give a shout out for Drew. What up, Drew? And he came from being a plumber in New Jersey, I think, and now he's doing amazingly well with coding. So I think I won't say like anybody can learn it, because some people might not be interested in learning, but anyone that's really interested and like curious about it, I think can really learn, because it's a sequence of logical steps. And if you can think logically, then, I feel like you can build up the knowledge to understand it. Yeah.
That's really good to know. If you're a plumber out there and you're listening to this podcast and you never thought you could be a programmer, now there's proof that you can. But seriously, anybody who is motivated enough to go through the difficult parts will be able to make it, I think. Because it's hard when it's hard. And that's what you were referring to when you said that we run into bugs as soon as we go off the script a little bit on a tutorial. It's going to happen if you're building, let's say that you go to a website and you find a step-by-step tutorial on how to build a certain type of application or a website, and you start following that step-by-step. Invariably, you'll find that one of the steps does not produce the results that the tutorial said that you should expect. And sometimes it's because you did something wrong, you typed something wrong, or you made a mistake in the way you set up your computer. Sometimes the underlying framework, the underlying software library or framework that you're using, that has changed. And you're now on a different version and it's not compatible. It happens all the time. It happens to me all the time. But since I've gone through this so many times over and over, I come to expect it.
Right.
It's good to have somebody that you can lean on. It's good to have somebody that you can talk to. And then, just even if they don't actually help you, but just to know it's okay. It's normal. You'll get through this. And then sometimes you need somebody to actually work together with you on the problem to go out of it or find a solution that works. Sometimes what happens is there is an actual bug in the framework. It's pretty common. If you're using, for instance, Ruby on Rails to build... to build a website, and the new version of Ruby on Rails that you installed has a bug in it, has a problem that's not your problem, but now you're building on top of. So you're going to have to find a workaround. Right. That's just how it goes. And it's okay, because eventually at some point they might fix it. And we just have to constantly adopt the changes, constantly adapt our skills and know that there's never going to be a perfect solution, and we just have to find a balance. Engineers, because I studied engineering, engineers kind of know that instinctively, because engineering is all about finding the right compromise between different options to get to the result. You just want to have a finished result that's acceptable, And it doesn't matter which approach you take. And that's a nice engineering concept that I think when you're building software, you should think like an engineer a little bit. It's like these Lego pieces. You need to put those Lego pieces together to come up with your building. And if a certain piece doesn't work, throw it out and find something else that works in its place. So that's pretty awesome. But I am curious about the sets of technologies and frameworks and so on that you're using. Do you have a choice in your coding bootcamp to pick a technology, or is it given to you?
We do have a choice. So we could have gone into the C# in .NET path, or the Java in Android path, or Ruby in Ruby on Rails path. And I went to the PHP and Drupal track. Part of it is because, you know, I'm into education, and a lot of the universities will use PHP and Drupal. So that was part of it. But all of those different tracks learn Ember and Angular as well. And it's been interesting because, you know, PHP is a much older language, you know, compared to Ember and Angular, which has positives and negatives, right? Because the exciting thing about Angular is, like, they're constantly updating it. You can work with Firebase and you can do this and that, which is great. But the downside of they're always updating it with new features is they're constantly deprecating other things that that you're trying to learn. And I'm just getting started with it, but I'm seeing that it's a beast and it's on a fast lane, right? Versus, like, if you're working with PHP and Silex, my experience of it is, like, it is what it is. And you get to know it and you get to work with it. Learning, that's been kind of an interesting experience.
I was going to say, learning Ember and Angular and to some extent React is a very humbling experience, because you're never the man. You're right. you're never really comfortable. You're never on a solid footing because the ground under you just keeps moving. And it's generally true for a JavaScript framework. So I think it's a good attitude to have, to never be comfortable and never know, like, I know everything there is to know and I don't need to learn anymore. Just close down the books, you know, and turn off the computer. I'm set for the next 10 years, right? That's something that you could probably do in Java, maybe.
Right.
Maybe you can do that in PHP to an extent, but you can't do that if you're working on modern web development frameworks like Ember, Angular, React, and so on. Mm-hmm. But if there is somebody out there and thinking, well, you know, I don't want to be in a place where I have to constantly learn, right? I don't want to be in this rat race. I want to be secure. So you can say, well, how about I learn a language that doesn't change so much, or a framework that doesn't evolve, at least in the world. Maybe the versions keep changing, but the industry as a whole doesn't adopt new changes as frequently. So then I don't have to keep on that treadmill. That's an interesting thought. However, the reality is a little mixed. It's not always true, because if you are working on PHP or C# or Java, and you're building web applications, then the chances are you will need to build something that works with the modern times, right? It's faster, it's more fluid, it updates more frequently, it doesn't have page refreshes as often, and the chances are that you're going to need to use some client-side framework together with it. Right. For instance,
right.
Angular is a very popular choice, or Ember or React or something else. Chances are you may need that anyway. So one way of approaching this dilemma of having to learn two different things that are unrelated in a lot of ways, like if you're learning Angular and if you're also learning PHP, you're learning two different environments and two different frameworks, and both of them work together in a single application. You may need to know both. But another way of looking at it, which is how a lot of people have started doing it, is to say, I don't need to worry about learning two frameworks if I learn the most important one, which is the client side or the front end framework. So let's say that I want to be the Angular guy. or the Angular girdle. And I go in there and I just bury myself inside Angular and I immerse myself and I come out knowing all the API and just I've built 5 different UIs based on Angular. The second question is, okay, you have a nice user interface and your user interactivity is very good, user experience is very good, but you now need a server-side framework to handle the backend, to handle the data, to handle any logic that does not need to be in the client, right? And there are lots of cases for that. So then you have to say, let me learn the minimum amount that I need to learn on a server-side framework such as Java. Java has different frameworks in .NET or PHP and so on. I can do that. On the other hand, you mentioned Firebase a few times. And the reason Firebase is important is because it takes out the server-side framework. And essentially, it gives you sort of a built-in framework in the cloud kind of deal where you can save your data and it just saves it for you and you can get it back by making API calls. And it's very limiting. I've used it and I've been frustrated with it. It doesn't support all relationships and all those
like many too many relationships.
Right. It's been very frustrating for me, and I found that it was inadequate for my needs. But it's an opportunity now for people to choose between these two frameworks. If I'm starting out right now and I say I don't have enough time to learn PHP and Angular, but I can learn one. My recommendation in 2017 would be to start with Angular.
Right.
Because there is a way to get started with Angular without using a backend framework. You can use Firebase or something like it. Or you may be able to use a minimal knowledge that you can get for, you know, you can just set up a simple web server with an API that you can call using HTTP. So we call that a REST API.
Right.
You can have that. You can build it in any framework that you like. It's probably not that complicated. In some cases, you can't avoid it. In some cases, if you're building an application for plumbers, because we were talking about plumbers a lot today, right. Or some other people who really they don't necessarily need a very, very fluid user experience, right? They have a website that's always on their computer, like an automobile dealer, right?
Right.
They have a computer always running with the website always running. So they're not going to use it on an iPad, for instance.
Right.
They have a very fixed need. There's no reason for you to invest a lot of money and resources in learning a single page framework and faster boot times and faster reloads and all that stuff that you get from a client side framework. You can just build a PHP site and just be done with it, right?
Right.
And so there's value in both of them. You just have to know what you're targeting. But I just want to point out that things are not as clear cut as they seem. But if you want my recommendation in 2017, start with the client side frameworks first if you're starting from zero. What do you think?
No, I agree completely that, you know, if you're going to choose one, I would say, yeah, you know, start with Angular, especially because, you know, like every day there's like new features and new functionalities. And, you know, who knows, maybe in a year, you know, that will be it. And like, you know, they won't need a server-side framework anymore, right? Like, who knows? Like, things change so incredibly fast. But I did find that if you do have the time, though, to learn like the sort of the more sort of classic languages, right? You kind of get I feel like a more foundational understanding of how, you know, a bigger site works, right? And how you know, how the routing works and how you know, that interaction with the database works. So one thing that I feel so incredibly lucky is that at Epicoda, it's like every fifth week is a team week. So you can do a team project, and I was able, and you can make it about anything. And I was able to, bring some of my colleagues in to help me create, a PHP site for the music school where we could, record, you know, the teachers, information about them, the students, information about them, the different classes, those levels that we talked about, information about those and lessons, and then you can enroll a student to a lesson and a teacher to a student and create all those different relationships between them, which has been, even now, like in 2017, that's not revolutionary in technology, but for my business, it's amazingly revolutionary for me not to have to be looking in spreadsheets and like driving myself nuts trying to figure out who's teaching who and who are their parents and whatever else. It just makes it all so so clean, and it was kind of a dream come true to have something that I've been struggling with for years and have a team of other students come and just help me out with that. And I feel incredibly grateful, and I really appreciate PHP and what it was able to do in that sense, to really, you know, in a very solid, you know, it feels pretty safe and in clear way, like, you know, create those relationships in those databases and just make things a breeze to do admin, you know. It's been great.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you have a lot of questions about which frameworks to use, which languages I should learn, and how do I get started, and Ember, and hey, wait, Angular now has 3 different versions, 1, 2, and 4. What happened to 3? And you might say, well, Angular 4 is out. Should I learn that? Maybe I should learn 2 because it's been out for longer, or maybe I should use Angular 1 because all the jobs are in Angular 1. So these are questions that you may have. So send me your questions. I'd be happy to answer them. My email address is us@mentoringdevelopers.com. All right. So we're getting towards the end of this interview and we're having such a great time.
Yeah, this has been really fun, Arslan. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we have a few more questions before we finish. But I wanted to mention that we're probably going to have you back for other interesting topics to discuss because you have a lot of ideas and you have a lot of facets to your personality. All of them are interesting and fascinating for me. Entrepreneurship, it's close to my heart. And music education is also something I think about a lot, as well as mentorship and the experiences of being a new developer and CodeCamp and all that stuff. But I wanted to ask you about how you feel you're thrown into this environment where you're building real applications. You've never done this before. You've never really found yourself in a place where you're learning the fundamentals. Like people say, walk before you can run, right? Mm-hmm. And then take your time. Just like in music, it takes time to learn the theory. It takes time to practice. Practice your craft, deliberate practice. Every day, practice a little bit. That's what they say in music. Same thing with programming and same thing with any other skill that is not just a skill in the sense that it's not just how do you write a for loop, you know, how many ways can you write this algorithm that would be called a kata, which is something that we do a lot in our industry as well, not as much as we should, but we do. But more than that, it's knowledge. For instance, you mentioned databases. Now, a database as a topic is a subject on its own. People spend in their entire lives learning databases and optimizing them and so on. But just to get your real-world application up and running, you need to learn about databases and the relationships and how to organize your data. Then you may need to study object-oriented design. You may need to study what that is all about. Now, not every programming language and framework is object-oriented in this day and age, and there is a shift away from it, but largely we are still an object-oriented, we live in an object-oriented world. It actually, I like it like that, so to each their own, but you need to understand how to do object orientation. It's not natural, it's not obvious, you need to learn that. You need to learn about a million different things that go into making a piece of software. You didn't have any of that. So you're starting out. How are you feeling? Are you feeling overwhelmed? When you're starting out, are you like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? Or were you like, this is easy?
No, there are definitely moments of frustration and moments of doubt. I will have to say that truly your podcast was incredibly helpful. Like, I listened to probably like 20 of, or however, you know, a large amount of podcasts, because I was like, what it helped me do is get emotionally prepared, because a lot of times you talk about imposter syndrome and you ask different people about that subject, and they all had very interesting things to say about it. So having that emotional preparedness really, really helped, you know, because it can be overwhelming. And I've seen some, colleagues at times be really overwhelmed, you know, or I've been overwhelmed at times. We actually had a snowstorm here in Portland for like a whole week, because they don't really have plows because they're not ready for snow. Because it doesn't really happen.
Yeah.
And so it was actually a snowstorm for like 1 or 2 days, but like that whole week we couldn't go to school and we had to learn on our own. So that was really overwhelming to have to try, you know, to learn, you know, all this object oriented, like JavaScript stuff, on our own, and trying to learn jQuery. And, you know, at times you feel like, oh, I just, you know, in coding school, you feel like, okay, I finally got this language. And then next week they're like, okay, now we're starting something completely different. and that can be an overwhelming feeling, you know, like you're trying not to drown. But I think if you just keep a calm, steady attitude about it, and just a curiosity. I like what you said about that engineering mind. Like, if you're working with a framework, the person that created the framework, or the persons that, you know, that created the framework, you know, they had certain ideas in mind, a certain like vision of how that framework would work. And like, once you can tune into that, right, like, how were they thinking about like would be a good way to design a website or an application? I feel like that's helpful. And then also just, you know, just finding, I think the hardest thing is finding community and building friendships and knowing that there are other people going through the same struggles. And if you learning how to Google things correctly, because invariably you'll find that there are other people having the same struggles and they're all trying to figure it out as well. So if you can find those people and create those relationships, I think that's what I'm learning is really important.
It's really good advice. Also, I'm happy to know that the podcast is helping you. And I know that I've received comments and messages from others that it has helped them. It's really good to know, because not only that it validates the idea for this podcast, and whatever effort goes into producing it, it makes it worthwhile to know that people are benefiting from it. I would love to hear more people tell me if this has been useful or not. But more than that, a podcast like this needs to exist. And that's why I do it, because so often we like to throw people in the deep end and just pretend that either they swim or sink. This is the... This is how I started. When I started my career, I didn't find any mentorship. I didn't find any concept of hand-holding. It was kind of a dirty word. We don't do hand-holding, because either you're good or you're out.
Right.
What I found was that most people can make it, and they can be very successful in software development if they had somebody who would lend a helping hand, maybe just listen to their problems and maybe just be empathetic a little bit, right? We just need to be a little bit more human, right? And I think that as a whole in our industry, we were missing that. So I'm trying to do my part to just bring those issues to light and just take the taboo off of it. We are all struggling. I struggle with programming with issues all the time. We all do it. We all have imposter syndrome, right?
Right.
And let's bring it out into the open and and just be good people. And I think if we do that, we will make it easier for new people to come into this industry, which we need. We need more people. Mm-hmm. And we'll encourage women and minorities and people of all stripes, older people and younger people.
Kids and plumbers.
And plumbers, especially plumbers. Because if you are a plumber, you're probably very good at solving problems. Yeah. And you probably want to get out of that business really bad. So you have the motivation. So I think that all works really well. Now, I'm not going to ask you a lot of questions about your career because it's sort of just starting. I know that after you graduate, you're not sure if you are going to get a job or if you are going to build on this business. You have certain ideas. We didn't get a chance to talk about any of that. But I think it just goes to show that you have a lot to offer us as an audience, and what you have to share with us is interesting. So we're going to have you back. We're going to talk about what you want to do with your career, what entrepreneurship ideas you have. We talked about these four ideas, creating a win-win relationship between a mentor and a mentee, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that. Then education and entrepreneurship. And you are an immigrant, and immigrants in the U.S., in the U.S. with entrepreneurship ambitions, that's an interesting mix. We're going to talk about that. And then I think we should also talk about what should a new person study. And these are really great ideas, Carlos. And we're going to have you back to talk about it.
I would love to. Thank you so much.
And I'm real excited that we were able to have you, especially that you benefited from this podcast and now you're on the podcast. So it's
kind of a product of the podcast in a way.
That is awesome. We're going to have a testimonial from you. So put it on our website.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So give us all of your information. How can people get in touch with you, Carlos? If they're interested in your music academy, if they want to ask you a question, or how do people get in touch with you, Carlos, to help you out? Maybe they have a job for you.
Okay. So the name of the music school is Star Power Music School. So if you go to starpowermusicschool.com, that's our website, which I made before I went to coding school. So I'm still working on a newer website. So don't judge me too harshly on there. So that's starpowermusic.com. If you want to, become a music teacher or become a music student, please feel free to contact me there. So, or you can email me at info@starpowermusic.net. So the email is .net and the website is .com. So info@starpowermusic.net to talk to me about music. And feel free, if people have any opportunities for, jobs in education or businesses that have to do with music education or other education in general, I'm very interested. I'm just interested in doing business and teaching and community, all those things.
Awesome. And and you can send me an email again at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. I read those emails and I reply to them personally, but also send me your questions. Our Twitter handle is @mentoringdevs, and you already know the email address. Send me questions for Carlos, because I can just forward it to him and we can ask him next time he's on. And we're going to have a little bit of a change in the podcast in the coming weeks and months. And it's a little bit of a surprise, but it's exciting, and we are going to talk about it when it's ready. So stay tuned for that. And Carlos, it was such a pleasure having you.
Thank you so much, Arslan. It's been a great time.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hi, folks. Arslan here again. Do you ever wonder if you're getting paid what you're worth? Now, salary is a taboo subject in the U.S. and North America and the world in general. We don't really know if we are getting paid enough for the type of work that we're doing, where we live, and so on. Nobody talks about it. So if you're curious about it and you want to get an insight into how much you might get paid and what's the sort of general salary trend in the world and in the U.S. in particular, you're curious about that, go ahead and sign up for my mailing list where I'm going to send you emails and essentially anecdotal reports and some really firsthand reports on how much you can expect to get paid. I'm working on that and I'd like you to be a part of it. So go ahead and go to mentoringdevelopers.com/list. mentoringdevelopers.com/list. I'll see you there.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.